introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he puts
look at this!
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Back with the full crew here to talk a little bit of football, a little bit of Vikings. QB1, my man, how you doing? How you been?
Good, man. It's game day. You know, Vikings play the Seahawks today. A lot of things have happened with the Vikings this past week, and I'm excited to talk about it with you guys.
All right, well, let's do it. Miles, my man. Ladies and gentlemen, we do got to call this out because, you know, we give Yink a real hard time. And like, you know, Miles was the last one here today. What's going on, wide receiver one? Like, this is not like you.
I was waiting for y'all. I was ready an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all
Gotta get the kids to bed. Yink is like, I got to eat. So I'm like, all right.
But, so you were ready for us an hour ago, but you the last one here. How'd that work?
I figured y'all let me know when y'all ready. So mm-hmm.
Okay.
Conceited.gif.
Mm. Saxy Prince, man. How you doing?
Yo,
reporting
what's up,
live from someplace with working internet. We love it. We like it.
Yeah, and the internet here is super fast. It's basically a supercomputer, so
you mean it's just AT&T, right?
Hey, hey.
Comcast, actually. So
we'll take the upgrades where we can get them. Well, mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of stuff going on in Viking land, as JR alluded to, that we have to talk about, but the thing that has made really people the most worked up, most upset, most riled up is football being ruined. And so I needed to get your opinion because it's the preseason. There's some points of emphasis. Obviously, in the Vikings game last week, there was a call that that made the rounds, made people very upset. Looked to be a good sack by all accounts, by most accounts. Mike Zimmer disagreed after the game, but by most accounts, looked to be a good sack. And it was a 15-yard penalty, and that's based on the whole point of emphasis. So not necessarily new rule, but point of emphasis about driving a quarterback into the ground. In this case, the quarterback was in the pocket. And then obviously the helmet rule is getting a ton of play where people are upset about the rule. Basically, where the NFL is looking to get players to stop looking down at the ground when they make tackles, because in that posture, your risk of, you know, spinal injury, see Ryan Shazier, your risk of, you know, concussions, etc., go up. NFL's being sued over stuff like that, so they obviously need to do some stuff to try to protect themselves against future litigation, etc., etc., etc. JR, I'm going to start with you because I know you have some strong feelings about this rule. And after last week, it looked like most everyone hit a boiling point. Have these new rules ruined football?
No, they haven't ruined football, but I think it's diminished the product a bit. And that's not to say people are going to stop watching the NFL. It's turning into flag football. It hasn't. I think people are just exaggerating when they say that, but they're making it very tough on the players because when they're going to hit certain guys or a certain target, they're really starting to second guess or question themselves about how they should hit them. And I'm all for a league safety. I'm not saying that. I'm all for the safety of the players and improving players' overall safety and the quality of the game. But it's just so hard for guys to play the game when they're second guessing exactly how they should hit these guys. And it's just natural reactions to hit a player a certain way. And it's really hard for guys to keep their heads up when they tackle. I know everybody says, oh, man, you got to keep your head up when you tackle. But it's natural reaction for you to duck your head when you're making contact with somebody. And that's not to say that they should come in like a battering ram and just hit somebody head on. But if you're hitting somebody, especially guys like safeties, even linemen, when they're getting out and pulling, it's hard for them to keep their heads up. And it's just a natural reaction for them to duck before they initiate contact. So, yes, it's making the game safer. But I think it's starting to diminish the quality of the game because players are really starting to second guess exactly what they're doing out on the field. And it makes it really tough on them. Me personally, I hate the rule, but I'm all for player safety. And I mean, it is what it is at this point. Referees are going to call it more than what they are going to do in the season because they're really experimenting with this new rule. But I hate the rule, But like I said, I'm all for player safety, but they're making it extremely tough on the players.
Yeah, Miles, and to kind of, you know, piggyback, because one of the things that I've heard as it's kind of a talking point about this, and you know, JR brought up player safety, which is obviously the thing that, you know, the NFL is kind of is leading with as they talk about this new rule and the heads up campaign and all of those things. I guess, but what about the thought that if players are second guessing themselves, like JR says, that there's the potential that you could see more injuries because players aren't aggressively attacking as they would. I mean, that's something I've heard. I guess, what are your thoughts on that in terms of this whole discussion about, you know, the new rules and how it's affecting defensive players?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement, that the idea that you, when you feel hesitant and you start doing things that are not quite as full speed, you kind of half-ass it in a way, there's a higher risk of injury, because those are where, when you're not trying to do something, when your body doesn't, you know, you're not fully going full speed, it's hard for your body to do some of the things you need it to, especially when you're trying to make a collision type impact. If you're slowing yourself up to make it, you know, a tackle, that, you know, your muscles aren't quite as like flexed, or you know, you're bracing yourself, so there's not as I'm not a doctor, so I can't completely explain it, but I just know that, like, when your body's not expecting something, or when you're trying to brace yourself for stuff, it can make things worse for your muscles and joints and all that stuff. So I definitely agree with that aspect of it. I'd rather see my players go full speed. At the same time, I understand how they're trying to take some of these violent, unnecessary collisions out of the game. There's definitely some of those, especially in, like you see in the kickoff rule. I know they've tried to help affect that. They've done things with the pulling from guards and tackles and all that from offensive linemen, ball carriers. They're trying to do things to keep guys' heads up, because I understand that idea that your head needs to be up and you want to be looking, because, you know, the impact of guys like we've seen, unfortunately, guys like Ryan Shazier, when their heads go down, bad things happen. But the hard part is when you're bracing yourself for a hit, you know, you're lowering your shoulder, or you're trying to get lower than the guy in front of you. The hard part is your head's going to go down, whether it's, you know, keeping your neck up or not is a little bit of a different story. But these guys aren't trying to lead with the crown of their helmets. It's not something they're trying to do. So I understand trying to make sure that, from the league standpoint, you want to make sure that they know that they're not supposed to be leading with the crown of their heads, and they should be keeping their face masks up. But it's really, like I said earlier, it's really easier said than done. So I am really curious to see how much of an impact it really is. For me, I really do think early on in the process, the first few preseason games, their plan is to throw as many of them as they can and as flags, so that they can make sure they know what to go back and look for, and so they can determine for themselves whether it really is going to be a penalty or not heading into the regular season. Because what we forget is, for the refs too, this is practice for them. This is practice for their regular season, so they understand the new rules in game time situations, like what the preseason's for. So it's just as much of a preseason for the refs as it is players. So I kind of think it'll dial back a little bit as we get to the regular season. But right now, I'm not surprised by as many penalties as they have.
Yeah, Prince, and you know, we'll bring it home with you here. Aaron Rodgers rule, man. What are your thoughts? How you feeling? Do you feel like it's being called way too much? Do you feel like maybe the echo chamber of Twitter is making it seem worse than it really is? What are your thoughts about all this when you kind of piece it all together? And what kind of impact do you think it's going to have when we get to the regular season?
Yeah, I don't really think that you can have a certain, especially a new rule, I don't think it can be called too much. Like Miles says, like, this is practice for the refs. They basically what it comes down to is, when the refs are done after every game, you know, they want to, just like players do when watching their game tape, they want to have a wide range of, okay, this was a certain situation that happened in which it was called. You know, this is probably what we should be doing. This is probably what we should be calling here and probably not calling it there. And if they try to be too perfect in the preseason, then there, as we know, during the regular season, there's a lot of ambiguity that happens. You know, maybe a player gets pushed or trips or whatever the case is, and now we don't really know how to call it. And then the call is, you know, to some people, it's supposed to be pretty obvious, and some others, it's, you know, up to interpretation. So it's a new rule that's implemented. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with the rule, but at the end of the day, it is a rule that that does exist now. So I'd much prefer the refs to explore the full range of what could happen in an actual game that matters during games that don't matter. Because, again, just like Miles said, this is practice for the refs. If I want them to get it right in, the regular season, I need them to sometimes get it wrong in the preseason, so that it limits the amount of times that they're getting it wrong in the regular season. So, rule is, it's whatever. But I'm more than okay with them exploring it.
Okay. Well, all y'all were real diplomatic about that. So I'm going to say, if you're on the less diplomatic end of the spectrum and you want someone to get you riled up who feels like you feel, check out the new video from Realistic Randy, climbingthepocket.com. He has some choice words about the Aaron Rodgers rule. And he's a lot less diplomatic about it than these gentlemen were. So let's slide along here into some of this Vikings talk. And I know we're supposed to. We're going to recap the game the Vikings played last week, but we're going to do this real quick because that game was terrible. And so what I'm going to ask each of y'all to do, I don't want, deep dive analysis, play by play, any of that kind of stuff, because it was just bad. There's really not much to talk about here, especially as it pertains to the starters that was any good. JR, I need you to give me one word to describe last week's game.
Boring.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely was that. Miles Gorham. One word.
Sad.
Woo. Yes, it was.
I mean, there's a lot of injuries. So I know it's one word, but there's a lot of injuries.
It was sad. It was sad. And the injuries also made it sad. Even without the injuries, it was sad. Saxy Prince, bring us home, man. One word to describe the game.
Lemon booty.
That's a good word.
To say that one.
That's a good word. That's a good word. And it's a good segue. Because, Randy and I, we had a little bit of a back and forth on Twitter, bit of a, not necessarily a disagreement. Randy's point of view was that, one of the overlooked things in, Kirk Cousins coming to Minnesota from Washington is that, Minnesota, stable organization, good front office, the owners aren't involved, and that the culture in Minnesota would help Kirk Cousins' mindset, which would in turn help Kirk Cousins on the field. My counter to that was that I don't know how you would measure that. What I can measure is that Kirk Cousins has really good wide receivers here and they're going to help him perform, but the offensive line isn't as good, so that might hurt him. And those things we can measure, whereas culture, yes, I agree that good culture is better than bad culture, but I don't know how you measure that or actually put numbers to the impact or really say what it actually means in terms outside of narrative. So I pushed back on it a little bit. The reason we go through all this and bring all this up is that, as Yinka just said, lemon booty, our man Kirk Cousins seemed a little tight out there in front of the home crowd. So, JR, QB1, take us inside the mind of Kirk Cousins here, because, just from, I guess we'll say a layperson's perspective, watching him play that game, he looked tight out there, short hopping passes, throwing things a little high. Really, everything seemed super cautious, and he did not seem like a confident player while he was on the field. What did you see?
Yeah, he looked like a completely different guy than what we saw against the Denver Broncos. Against the Broncos, he really was cutting it loose. He was throwing guys open. He was extremely accurate with every ball that he thrown. Against the Jaguars, his footwork was just skittish in the pocket. He was second-guessing, pump faking a lot. In the pocket, and what I like to call, he was burping the baby with the ball. That just means just sitting back there, patting the ball. And then he just looks like he was very indecisive back there. And what was most disappointing was his ball placement, which was really all over the place. He even one-hopped one ball to the field that he threw. Kyle Rudolph, he was inaccurate over the middle. And if he just sticks it on his body, it's an easy first down. So maybe it was his first time playing in front of the crowd, and he was just tensed up, and he just put a lot of pressure on himself, which is what I'm hoping it was. But he just looked really nervous back there. But hopefully he'll rebound this week against the Seahawks. But what you heard a lot throughout the week was that both defenses is what looked best throughout the joint practices. So it was a combination of both. It wasn't just the Vikings offense. The Jaguars offense really struggled throughout the week. Versus the Vikings defense. So maybe they were just going against a really good defense and he just really struggled and never rebounded. But You're talking about a guy that was paid $84 million guaranteed, and you're expecting him to lead this offense, and that type of performance that he had last week was just unacceptable. And hopefully he is able to rebound against a Seattle defense this week.
Yeah, and one of the points that Mike Zimmer brought up, you know, in his press conference after the game was like he was glad they didn't win that game because they didn't play well enough to win. And I guess from your perspective, I know it's preseason. Preseason doesn't mean a whole lot. But, you know, could going out and just looking this bad be something that ends up being turned into a positive for the team or the offense? Something that really lets them know that, you know, all these, you know, people are saying that we're going to go out here and break all these records or whatever. But maybe it's something that kind of humbles them, puts them back on track if we're looking for a silver lining.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of moving parts with the Vikings offense. New offensive coordinator, new quarterback. And we all know they have a patchwork offensive line currently right now. They really didn't do much to help him against the Jaguars either. So it wasn't just all on Kirk Cousins. It really was a combination of a lot of things. Even John DeFilippo came out and said that it wasn't his best effort as a play caller against the Jaguars either. So it was a combination of a lot of things. And like I told you guys, I don't expect much from the Vikings offense during the first quarter of the season, but around week five or week six, I think that's really when they're going to hit their stride. So the defense has to really get off to a fast start, because I don't want to say the offense will struggle, but I don't think they'll hit their stride until about the fifth or the sixth week of the season.
Well, you know, there was one thing that I did notice a little bit in this performance. I'm going to let Miles talk about it a bit, because you brought up a play, the Kyle Rudolph play there. I know Miles has some thoughts on, you know, who was at fault there and what kind of went on that play. But it felt like in week one, when Kirk Cousins was really on fire, that the first read in the progression was almost exclusively newly paid wide receiver one, Stephon Diggs. And when Kirk Cousins was throwing him in week one, you know, perfect performance. Miles, could there be anything to that? That, you know, Kirk just needs to throw it to Stephon Diggs and everything will be okay.
No, yes, yes, for sure. But I think what the big thing is, you know, each quarterback, they usually have that guy that they find that, you know, that their go-to guy. And last year we knew, obviously, Keenum threw to – it was either Diggs or Thielen or Rudolph. But his first read was the slot receiver, which was Adam Thielen majority of the time. It seems like to me, with Kirk Cousins, the way he likes to play, he likes to stretch the field vertically a little bit more. He likes to take a little more opportunities and chances. He likes to sling it to the outside and give his guys space to work. So I just think he might have found that in Stephon Diggs, and I think that just could be the guy that he feels comfortable throwing the ball to. Not that he's not comfortable throwing it to Thielen or Rudolph or any of the other receivers or running backs or whatever, but it could just be that Diggs is that guy for him right now, because they're still so early in the stage of getting to know each other that, you know, he's just gravitating towards Diggs because that's just something he feels comfortable doing. So I wouldn't look too much into it right now, but I've said all along that I think this year is going to be Diggs' year to be the true quote unquote wide receiver one in terms of like targets and all that target share. But just because I think Cousins is gonna find him a lot more often down the field and let him kind of work. So I feel like that's the only reason right now, but I expect that to even out a little bit as we go, because it's still definitely really early.
All I heard there was that Diggs will be getting all the targets, and I like it. So we'll move on to Sexy Prince.
Yeah, ain't no quotes needed there, bro.
So Sexy Prince and Miles, you can hop back into, because I did see that you and Josh, you know, discussed this a little bit. But Josh put out an article, his video breakdown. Awesome article. Check it out on climbingthepocket.com. If you have not already done so, I will put a link to it in the show notes, where he went through each one of Kirk Cousins' throws and gave his thoughts, his opinions on kind of each one based on what he could see in coverage, the route combinations, and all of that stuff. Sexy Prince, after watching the game, after looking at the article, I know typically discussions of Kirk Cousins are none of your business, but it's time. We need you back. Season's almost here. We got to get the kinks out during, you know, preseason so that you're back in there ready to go. What were your thoughts on everything that you saw, and are you concerned, or do you just feel like, you know, this will work itself out once the real season gets here?
Well, I mean, I guess I need to take away. I guess I need to get away from my vacation of, you know, the work that I typically do, which is minding my business. And I'll say, Kirk Cousins played pretty poorly at multiple levels. You could tell that his confidence wasn't there. You could tell he's getting frustrated. JR mentioned his ball placement, just like the way in which he was going through, you know, his reads and whatnot. You could tell was his timing and mechanics were just off. That being said, I didn't see anything there where I'm just like, oh, well, I think we're in trouble with Kirk Cousins. So I guess my my assumption is going to be that it was just an off day for Kirk Cousins, which I thoroughly expect throughout the season. But I don't think that it would last for very long, considering the weapons we have and the defense that we have. That's my business take on the matter.
That was all right, man. I'm proud of you, Sexy Prince. And so, all right, let's add some positivity back into things here, because it's preseason. We don't want to get too down on this. And, you know, it's things that I think, like JR said, a lot of moving pieces that can get worked out.
But the
sky is falling. Season is over. We're not going to win a single game because we'll be playing the Jacksonville defense every week. It's going to be terrible. Prince, standout. Give me one standout player on offense from the Jaguars game. Just one.
Ooh, one standout. I would probably go with Mike Boone.
Yeah, you're a smart man. You don't want his daddy coming after
me. I don't want his daddy coming after me. No, he looked good. He looked good in pass protection. He looked good just running the football. I think he's really run away with that running back three job. I just like his versatility and what he brings to the table. And then
he could probably take the wide receiver three job too. Sorry, Miles.
Well, I think he just looks comfortable already. He looks like he belongs there. I think he would definitely be some insurance if anything were to happen to Latavius Murray throughout the season. I think he would be a fantastic compliment to Dalvin Cook.
only if Latavius gets hurt. There's no way Cook is hurt, but if Murray gets hurt, we're straight.
No, I'm saying, like, I think his skill set complements. So yeah, I would say Mike Boone is the guy that stood out on offense for me.
All right, Miles, come on in, your turn. Who stood out for you on offense?
I don't think he played anything spectacular, but I'm gonna say Cornelius Edison for the fact that the guy has come in and. As of right now, it's not a complete train wreck at center. I'm not saying he's now all of a sudden like this, you know, we found a gem, you know, a diamond in the rough type player, but he's coming in and done a really nice job, and you've seen him progress as the time's gone on since Nick Easton got hurt, and obviously Pat Elflein's still been down. So I think he's done a really good job. Now, do I want him being the starting center week one? No, but have we seen Pat Elflein come off PUP? No. So where I worry is Cornelius Edison is going to be the week one starter at center, but the more he's getting opportunities to play with the ones and get coached up as a starting center right now, I think that's really good for his development, long-term development, just because I think, you know, that's going to help him in the short term. And then if and when Pat Elflein comes back, you have a guy that you might be able to trust and feel that you're comfortable having to be that backup center, and who knows, maybe they want to move him let him be a guard, or whatever, let his position flexibility stand out a little bit. But I thought he's done a nice job so far. So I thought he played pretty decent on last week, even though obviously there are times where he got worked, but that's going to happen. So.
Okay. JR, you're going to just bring it here. Give us one for offense, one for defense.
Yeah, you'll enjoy this, Jason, and it's Brian O'Neill. I thought he took another positive step in his development. Still has his issues in the running game. He gets pushed around a bit just because of his lack of strength, which will come over time as he gains weight and develops more and once he's in the Vikings weight training program. And I thought he looked very solid, and his pass protection still has yet to allow pressure this preseason, and I just thought he took a very positive step in his development, and hopefully he ends up being a starter one day for the Vikings, whether that's right or left tackle. So really happy about his progress to this point. He's way ahead of schedule than where I thought he would be during the preseason. Flip to the other side, a guy who I thought had a fantastic game was Ifeanyi Odenigbo. I thought he really stood out And he really flashed a bunch of times, had a couple sacks, and he probably could have had even more sacks if he just finishes some plays. He was very consistent and held up at the point of attack, set the edge very violently. So it's really good for him to provide some position flexibility, because that just makes his odds to make the roster even more. And when Ade Aruna went down with his knee injury, he really stepped up and contributed off the edge.
All right, all right, all right. Yes, sir. I do love that, Miles. Can you top it? No. Defense, who you like?
Defensively. Let's see here. He took mine, obviously. Nick Bode played. He played fantastic, but I won't go Hughes just because.
Prince? Was that an acceptable pronunciation?
I know. I said it wrong. I think I always get it mixed up. I'll say it right one time, then I'll say it wrong the next. All right.
Well, Saxy Prince made a ruling.
Oda Nigbo.
The media says Odenigbo, which is, I mean, I'll let it slide because they're not going to change their minds on it. I mean, I've even talked to him before, and he's called it like that, but I'm pretty sure if I talked to his Nigerian parents, they would give me a very different pronunciation.
Well, was Miles,
Miles was off.
Okay.
He said Oda Nigbo, and I'm like, oh, whoop, okay, we got another dude on the...
All right, but obviously he balled. We saw him play both, you know, three tech and defensive end and ball. But Eric Wilson's my guy. I mean, that dude's been all over the field for this defense. I mean, he had an easy sack, but he timed up the blitz perfectly. He's been, like I said, he's been all over the field, sideline to sideline. Wouldn't really surprise me at all if they wanted to play him in base packages as the third linebacker. That's how well he's played so far this offseason, this preseason.
Third linebacker, what is that? I'm sorry. Saxy Prince, defense. Who's your standout?
I feel like naming this guy is like kind of a cheat way, but he's just impressed me. He impressed me all last week when I was watching the, you know, the Jaguars practices. He just looks like he belongs, as JR always says, but Mike Hughes, I mean, he looks fantastic. He looks like a guy that is going to be a very big part of the Vikings defense in the next couple of years and beyond that.
Oh, you're talking about Bay? You talking about Bay?
I am talking about Miles Bay. But yeah, no, he looks absolutely fantastic. He looks so fluid, very solid. Like I think he was only targeted, has he only been targeted like twice?
I think it's three times in two games.
Three times in two games, because he's just like he's putting the clamps on these wide receivers.
I like how Miles is like, I think it is, and just like
off all this. I mean, I'm just guessing, but
I'm just guessing, and it's passer rating against.
But no, my guy would be Mike Hughes, and if you go back and review the tape, you'll see why.
Okay. All right. Well, the dress rehearsal game is almost upon us tomorrow. Today, I guess, when this is released, game day. Playing the Seahawks, you know? Home of arguably the best quarterback in all of football, Russell Wilson. But I guess my question, JR, starting off, because this is a weird question, you know, with what Seattle has been, I guess we'll say traditionally, not really traditionally, but over the last few seasons, what we've come to expect from them is them being good. Are they going to be bad this season?
I think they're probably the one team in the NFL that you have no idea what to predict. Like, I could see them being anywhere from a playoff team to having the top 10 or even the top 5 draft pick. Now, I think Russell Wilson will help them or keep them from being a top 5 draft pick type of team, but that roster has just had so much overturn this offseason, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And then their offensive line is still a mess, even though they invested a couple draft picks in it this year. But Jamarco Jones is going to be out for a little while, I believe, with an ankle injury. And he was showing some promise. So, once again, they're going down that road of not having a great offensive line in front of Russell Wilson. But now they don't have that strong defense to lean upon like they have had and years past, because they just haven't drafted well the past few years, and those past draft classes that were so good has now aged and gotten older, and now those guys have grown up and they're not on their rookie deals anymore, and you have to pay them eventually. So who knows? I think Russell Wilson will help them overcome in some areas, but there's only so much that he can do on the offensive side of the ball, and now that their defense has had so much overturn and overhaul, I don't think they're going to be able to lean on guys on that side of the ball anymore. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they do end up like a 5 or 6 win team.
Ooh, 5 or 6. Okay. Miles, you taking the over, the under? 6 wins, Seahawks.
Oh, can I push?
No.
Over. I think they'll find a way to win like 6 or 7 games. Okay. Russell Wilson will win at least 3 of them on his own. I also just don't – like, I think they'll sweep the team like the Cardinals. I think they'll at least split with the 49ers. So they'll find ways to win some games this year. I definitely don't expect them to be a playoff team, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they were, just because they do have a top-5 quarterback. And they still do have some talent on that team. I'm just curious to see how some of the draft picks shake out, like Rashad Penny and stuff like that. And seeing some of the guys that they're having fill some of the replacements for guys like Richard Sherman. The defensive end, Michael Bennett, stuff like that. And we'll see if Earl Thomas comes back, which really sounds doubtful at this point, but, you know, who knows? So we'll see. I do think there's some talent on that team still, so we'll see how that goes.
We'll just trade them Sendejo, and they'll send us Earl Thomas.
That's fair, right?
It's fair. Feels fair. Feels fair.
Michael Bennett is long gone.
Yeah, he gone. He gone. Zaxi Prince, over under 6 wins, Seattle.
I'm going to go over, but I'm going to say right at 7. I still think that defense needs to be completely retooled. I think you need to retool the offense as well, too. We need to get, honestly, Russell Wilson some help.
So like you just said they need to retool the whole team, and you're giving them 7 wins?
The entire team. Yeah, because I know that Russell Wilson is good enough where I know that he'll get them, you know, he'll get them over that hump, but they're not going to be a playoff team, in my opinion. 7 wins isn't a lot. So, I mean, I think that they can, you know, with Russ's legs and, you know, maybe a couple of plays here and there and stuff and his ability to just be efficient, I still believe they can at least get to 7 wins.
Okay. All right. And all right. So next thing we need to do here, because, you know, it's the preseason and we're not going super deep with the analysis on these here games. Miles kind of tongue in cheek brought this player up because, you know, subject of much discussion in the draft season. And then after he was taken, first round running back, this guy in the first round, Miles. Who has more yards this season, Rashad Penny or Chris Carson?
I'm going to say it's going to be Rashad Penny. I think he'll eventually win that job. But early on, it really does seem like it's going to be Chris Carson, and they're pretty sold on that, and they keep saying they're sold on CJ Procise. So, I mean, I'm a big CJ Procise fan, but he can't stay healthy. Neither can Chris Carson. So we'll see, but I really do think it'll be Rashad Penny that ends up winning that job, you know, a few weeks into the season, and I think he'll lead the team in rushing. If not Russell Wilson, leading the team in rushing.
JR, Carson or Penny, who has more yards?
I think Carson will, and I think Carson is going to start this year over Penny because he's shown more in preseason. Penny just has not looked the part to this point, and a lot of questions that I had about him pre-draft or on full display. Yes, he's able to create, and even though he's played behind a bad offensive line at San Diego State, his biggest deficiencies come and his flaws get exposed on passing downs. He's just not able to pass protect, and he's not a great catcher out of the backfield. And we all know playing with Russell Wilson, those are some of the things that you have to be able to do because he's a guy that consistently can create off script. And if you're not able to create or if you're not able to catch out of the backfield playing with him, you're going to have a tough time playing with him because he's just that wild card type of quarterback that likes to create and run around a lot and escape the pocket. So if you're not able to pass protect as well, we all know you can't play on third down in the NFL, and his pass protection has just been awful so far in the preseason. And Chris Carson has just flat out outplayed him to this point.
Okay. Zaxi Prince, break the tie. Carson Penny, who has more yards?
Well, I mean, Jason, you know I wasn't a huge fan of the Penny pick, so I'm going to go with Carson. I
didn't like the running back being selected in the first round?
I did, but I like
I'm
I didn't
go
feel
the tape on that one.
I didn't feel like Carson was a or not Carson, but I didn't feel like Penny was a first round running back. So that's why I was like quite against the pick. So
I'm disappointed in Yinka. We are halfway through the pod and he has not mentioned AP signing with the Redskins.
y'all just want me in the middle of the pod to be like, okay, well, first of all, we need to talk about Adrian Peterson signing with the Redskins.
I mean,
that's number 24,
boy,
right?
Last year, Saxon Prince, that's what you would have done, though. I mean,
your boy.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have let us talk about anything before we talked about the man, the myth, Adrian Peterson, most important player in the history of the Vikings franchise.
I mean, it's true.
With the veteran. Boy, you better stop.
I mean, they gave away that man's number.
But you're going with Carson, huh, Prince?
I'm going with Carson.
Okay, so the Carsons have it. Maybe Miles will have some bragging rights here as we get into the season, because you know y'all do need to listen to Miles every now and again. And at least a little bit more frequently than you do right now.
Rashard Higgins. What have I told y'all? Hollywood.
Oh, boy. Okay, so we're going to talk some receivers here, Miles. So you best be right on this one. Again, going back to the Seahawks here. And I know you've been prepping because you got, you know, your big draft coming up here. Who has more yards at the end of this season? Jerron Brown or Amara Darboh?
Amara Darboh.
Okay. Without hesitation. Okay, why?
He's a better player.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, JR. Darboh or Jerron Brown?
I'll go with Darboh. I think he was showing some good things last year.
All right.
So I think he'll continue to build off a decent year last year. So I'll go with Darboh.
Okay, bring us home, Saxy Prince. Clean sweep, or are you going with Jerron?
I'll go clean sweep, Amara Darboh.
Y'all know he's hurt though, right?
He'll be back.
And you know, we keep doing these segments. We might even, you know, do something come the season. We'll give a shout out to Tommy O'Joy on Twitter. Actually, hit us up in the DMs with a suggestion that, you know, we do kind of a season long thing where we make fake wagers on things that will happen like this throughout the season, and we'll see who really knows their stuff come the end of the season by, you know, who has the most wins. So, you know, we'll keep practicing, see how this looks, and you know, maybe something that we roll out in the season. We'll see. JR, as we get into this game, it's the dress rehearsal. It's the one preseason game that people at least like to pretend means a little something. What matchups are you most excited to look for in this game? You know, in the past, we'd say wide receivers versus the DBs, but I mean, I don't even know who's playing DB for Seattle anymore. So, like, what are you going to be looking for in this game?
I'll be looking at Dalvin Cook, and he's expected to play tomorrow or today, I should say. I'm not sure if he is actually going to get in the game, but Tom Pelissero has come out and said that he is expected to play and make his preseason debut. So I'll be seeing how he actually reacts to defenses, if the speed of the game is just too fast for him, which I really don't expect, and if he's hesitant out there running. So I'll be keeping a close eye on Dalvin Cook and see if he is fully recovered from that knee injury.
Okay. Miles, what you going to be looking at?
I'm looking at a few things. Obviously, the offensive line is going to be a key. Seeing Mike Remmers come back and play right guard, this will be one of the first few times he's played guard in the NFL. Rashad Hill is obviously another one. Just see how he rebounds back, because I'm really struggling with him as the starting right tackle. I'd almost prefer him to be the backup swing tackle, but that's neither here nor there. I want to see how the receiver position battle ends up, just because we've seen guys like Brandon Zylstra, Tavares King be hurt, and those were guys that I expected to be a little bit more competitive in what they've been. And I know Zylstra's looked good when he was healthy, but he hasn't played in the preseason yet. So I'm really curious to see how the 4 through 6 positions work out, if they do end up keeping 6 receivers to start the season. Just because at right now, if I had to peg it, I'd guess that they would pick up a veteran guy that gets cut or whatever, just to add some more depth. Just because right now I really thought the depth was strong, but I haven't seen a lot of guys step up and a lot of guys have been hurt, so it's hard to rely on that unproven depth. So I'm really curious to see how that shakes out.
All right, Sexy Prince, bring us home. What matchups are you really looking for in this game?
Maybe not necessarily specifically a matchup, but I do want to see how Zim starts to employ new Viking George Iloka. I want to see, you know, where he's getting lined up, what kind of package is he in, if he's mostly going to be kind of that a nickel guy that they bring in, maybe big nickel. Yeah, I just want to see where he's lined up and, you know, start to see is he going to be on tight ends a little bit more? Is he going to be on, you know, some of the larger receivers? I really just want to see what he's able to bring to the table just because he does know Zim's system. And, I mean, he can make an immediate impact starting the season.
All right. Well, you brought it up. It was on the notes. Well, you brought it up there. Iloka signed. And, obviously, it's the signing, I guess, we thought was going to happen. Was it last year, 2 years ago, that all of us thought that Iloka was coming? He came and ate all the food and then just left. But he's here now. And JR, you know, Prince, you hinted at it here, a little big nickel. One of the things that people have been talking about is the lack of depth for the Vikings and in the linebacking core. And I guess, what are your thoughts? Are you expecting now that, you know, with the league being what it is, it being a passing league, that maybe the Vikings at some point this season go to a big nickel as our base package?
I honestly have no idea what Mike Zimmer is going to do. And that's what made this signing so intriguing to me. And it's kind of like they're really overstocking the deck. They now have five safeties in house that they really trust, with the top three being Smith, Iloka, and Sendejo. So I'm really interested to see exactly how they incorporate Iloka in the mixture with Smith and Sendejo. And me and Jason talked about this. Now with Iloka playing most of the time on the roof of the defense, that's where he played 60% of his snaps a year ago. Maybe they want to experiment more with Sendejo and Harrison Smith roaming around the line of scrimmage, but they also could keep Sendejo on the roof, and now they could bring Iloka down more towards the box now in that big nickel package that we talked about. So basically a big nickel package is that you play a 4-2-5 defense, four down linemen, two linebackers, which of course would be Kendricks and Barr, and now you have five DBs on the field. So Iloka would be that overhang linebacker that you're replacing for a wheel linebacker. So he essentially would be like a third linebacker that could also cover tight ends or those slot receivers. And that's what I expect them to do with George Iloka. He seems to be more comfortable the closer he is to the line of scrimmage. His skill set suits better as a strong safety as opposed to a free safety, because he just wasn't comfortable on the roof of the defense last year with the Bengals. And that's why I think they ended up letting him go, because his skill set just wasn't what they were looking for on the roof of a defense. But now he comes to a system and a coach that he trusts. He's very familiar with the playbook. Mike Zimmer was saying that he knows about 80% of the playbook already. So I'm interested to see how they use him today against the Seahawks.
Okay, Miles. Iloka's here. What are your thoughts? What are your expectations? And I guess even better, what are your hopes for the defense and the way they incorporate him into this already number one defense in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not a bad thing by any means, just because of how cheap you got him for. He's still only 28 years old. I really see it as an opportunity for this team to maybe find their future replacement for Andrew Sendejo. I know Iloka's not, you know, he's not young, but he's 28. He'll be by next year 29. We know Andrew Sendejo has the $5.5 million cap hit next season. So if they really wanted to, they could probably potentially get Iloka for cheaper come next year and replace that. So there's that. You already have that in-house this season to get him reps with the team, you know, start that chemistry now with a guy like Harrison Smith and all the other defensive backs. So there's a little bit of that there that I see in the future. But right now, what I really expect is I don't expect a rotation early on. But I am curious to see how early they do put him in the game and at what capacity, because I don't expect it to be taking Andrew Sendejo out to put Iloka in, just because Sendejo has played well and he knows the defense so well. So I have a hard time just it being that way. But I alluded to it earlier on the timeline that I do feel like he's a really good matchup against in the red zone and, you know, and certain situations against tight ends, big tight ends. And the Vikings have quite a bit of and athletic tight ends too, I should say. The Vikings have a lot of games this year where they play some pretty good tight ends. They play Jimmy Graham, you know, the Packers twice, obviously. So, and then they play not the Broncos. They play the New England Patriots, who have Gronk, obviously. You got the Bears with Trey Burton. There might have been one other one that I highlighted that, off the top of my head, that I can't quite remember. But there are some guys that, with a guy like Iloka.
David Morgan in practice?
Yeah.
I think that was the one that you highlighted that was really going to help him sharpen his skills.
Yeah, that was it. No, but it's really important to me that you have a guy that of that athleticism, but of that size, that can move with those type of players, that can jump with those type of players. So I really like that because I think it's a chess piece that Zim can use in late in games or in the red zone, like I said. So I'm really excited to see that. And then, JR alluded to it too. Either you roll down Anderson Dejo in the box and let him be a linebacker, or you do it with Iloka. I think you can do that in like a dime or nickel packages where you don't have to bring in a corner, but instead you bring in a safety to play that position. Because it is still more, allows you to be a little bit more stout against the run. But it also allows you to be able to match up against tight ends and running backs and all that too. So, I really like the versatility that they're going to be able to bring. Now we'll see how much it actually happens and what their overall plan is. But, he also does just bring a lot of depth and experience that I think this team was lacking, because Jaron Curse has been hurt and he's also, hasn't shown as much as you'd like him to, after his being in his third season, but he was also a seventh round pick for a reason. So there is that. And then also Anthony Harris, who's played well, but he's struggled at times too. And he's not the type of guy you'd want to play full time reps over three, four plus games this season. So bringing a guy like Iloka for as cheap as you got him it's a steal. So I'm excited to see what they do.
All right, Saxy Prince. Iloka, you will take it full circle. You brought him in the last question, so you can bring it home right here on the discussion on Iloka signing with the team. And from your perspective, what are you hoping to see? Not just in this game, but as we get into the season with Iloka and what he could potentially mean for this team and this defense.
Yeah, I think something you have to think about is he brings insurance. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest things. Miles mentioned it is. We have had a few seasons where we've had to go out without either Anderson Dejo or Harrison Smith for a period of time. And, really losing any one of those guys, I mean, more especially Harrison Smith, but we even saw with Anderson Dejo is, you lose a lot in that, kind of that back end of that secondary. And having a guy who can, kind of be that big nickel, as well as, if he needs to step in and be at the head of the defense, like Jared was saying, you do have that flexibility, and that's something that I think is really important to Mike Zimmer's defense. So I'm more looking for, like I said before, the way in which they're going to employ Iloka, but more importantly, I'm excited to see the depth that they actually have in a position where Zimmer has made his safeties quite important to the defense, which is nice. Some teams don't as much. I mean, you look at the Browns and their safeties are, 20 yards away from the line of scrimmage. And then you look at Zimmer, who's like, their safeties are constantly moving. Like Harrison's either threatening at the line or, he's dropping into coverage or, he's being a run stuffer, like all that stuff. You're getting to see the versatility of the defense. So I want to see what Iloka, who basically knows the defense, what he can bring to the table, and maybe how he can change the makeup of, how Zim does blitz packages and whatnot.
Okay. All right. Only one point. I'm going to have to come back to that because I need JR to give me a little bit on this one here, because I know Nick Olson and I had a bit of a, not really back and forth, just a discussion where I was looking to get some information with him, because with the exception of 2017, Iloka has been a far superior player in coverage than Anderson Dejo. Anderson Dejo in 2017 had his best season ever, and that season that he had in 2017 was better than any season that Iloka had. But Iloka's, I guess, the next three, if you rank them from best to worst, the next three after Sendejo's, season that was, his peak last season, it's Iloka, 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 and then you get start getting back to the Sendejo seasons because, you know, based on, you know, if we're looking at PFF grades, Sendejo, and I think fan opinion as well, Sendejo wasn't very good. He was all right, but he wasn't very good until really last season where he broke out. So I guess with that in mind, with, you know, when we look at the bigger sample size, Iloka being a more proficient player in coverage throughout the course of their careers, I wanted to revisit a point that you made where you were saying that Iloka didn't look as comfortable or wasn't as good kind of roaming the middle, and how we kind of reconcile that with the fact that Iloka has been such a good player in coverage for the majority of his career.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And that's why I said I'm so interested to see how exactly they use Iloka, because I guess the wording was pretty poor in saying that he didn't really look comfortable when he was on the roof of the defense. He wasn't very consistent back there, I should say, and he's more comfortable the closer he is to the box, because that's where he can make plays. His strength is coming up and tackling and run support, and he's able to guard receivers and tight ends and man coverage because of how big he is. I mean, a lot of people don't realize just he's a really big safety. I think he's all of 6'4", 220 pounds, so he's a much larger safety than what Sendejo is, and that's what Mike Zimmer is really seeing. He loves those tall, lanky, rangy safeties that are very versatile, that can play on the back end of the defense, but they also come down and play in man-to-man coverage as well. So his length will probably give tight ends and those receivers a bit more problems than what Sendejo's length will cause, because Sendejo just isn't as big as Iloka. And also, even from an off-the-field standpoint, the Vikings are really looking at it as well. Maybe they can get a compensatory pick down the road if they do end up not re-signing Iloka. And we all know the salary cap is going to be really tight down the road, so they're probably not going to be able to bring in a high-priced free agent. So they'll be able to maybe get a compensatory pick down the road for Iloka as well. So I think it's not just an on-the-field factor that they're thinking about him. I think it's an off-the-field factor as well. So it's really a win-win situation for both parties.
All right. Okay. We're going to go in an order that doesn't make a lot of sense, because we were talking about Seattle, and then, you know, Prince gave us a perfect segue to jump into Iloka. We're going to go back, though. We're going to finish up one last question for Seattle, and then I think we're going to end the pod. So, not the best job of steering things by me here, but, you know, forgive me. It's the preseason for us, too. Start with you, Sexy Prince. In your opinion, who needs to show out in this game for the Minnesota Vikings? Like, who's the player on the bubble that needs to do something to make the team, make the practice squad, make it in the NFL? Like, who are you looking to see something from this week?
I'm not really looking for something from him, per se, because I think I've resolved that he's not going to make the team. But for his sake, Kendall Hunter, I think he needs to have the game of his life on
Kendall
tomorrow.
Hunter, do you mean Kendall Wright?
Kendall Wright, excuse me. Just because he hasn't really shown very much in camp. He hasn't shown very much in these last couple preseason games. As a guy that we thought could potentially push Treadwell for that third wide receiver spot, he hasn't really done very much. And I mean, for what Treadwell has done in the last couple seasons, it really wasn't really that hard for him to – it shouldn't have been that hard for him to really take grabs of that wide receiver three spot, but he hasn't been able to do very much. He's not getting very many reps in practice, from what I've seen and heard. He's not a guy who can really play on special teams. So, I mean, I would not be surprised if he's cut. And, you know, the Vikings don't owe him very much money, so he needs to show out in this game. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Miles Gorham, how about you? Who needs to show out this week?
Well, I'll piggyback off what Prince just said, just for the fact that Kendall Wright not stepping up the way I think people expect him to is a big reason why I see the Vikings going out and trying to find a veteran wide receiver to fill.
There's Bryant.
To fill some depth. Yeah, we're going to ignore that. just because I do think Kendall Wright was that veteran guy that they liked, that they thought could be that guy, and he still could somehow make the team, but it doesn't look likely right now. So I could see that happening. But to jump into the guy I would like to see show out, I don't know if – well, it could be a part of him making the team. Tyler Conklin, I just want to see a little bit more from him. I think he had a couple catches last week against Jacksonville, but apparently there's a battle between him and Blake Bell, which is still crazy to me, but there is a battle there between the two, and I don't think Tyler Conklin is 100% safe to make the roster. At least, you know, there's that potential, the practice squad or whatever, but I would like to see him get some opportunities, do a little bit more movement with him, and kind of see what he can do.
Okay. Tyler Conklin. Yeah, he really just, yeah, he hasn't really done anything at all to stand
no,
out.
No,
really,
right.
Not at all. Other than not catching that really terrible pass that was thrown to him that he was supposed to levitate backwards to catch because it touched his hands. And if it touches your hands, that's, I just, you know, this is a complete tangent.
We don't need to get into
this
it, but I'm tangent,
it. But that's one of my least favorite sayings that people say in football. Like, if it touches your hands, you have to catch it, because a lot of times, like, it's like impossible just based on physics and stuff.
And your momentum going one way.
Like,
but
you're sprinting one way and you just like throw a hand and like it barely touches your fingertips. But you were supposed to catch that because you were able to contort your body to get a finger on it. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm with you.
Yeah. JR, my man.
Football is easy, Jason.
It is very easy. Like our man. I can't. What was it? Oh, yeah. JR posted that clip of Odell Beckham running down the sidelines at full speed and stabbing a like the ball with one hand. And Buddy jumped into JR's mentions and be like, psh, I'll go out there right now and do that 8 out of 10 times. Like,
I'm still waiting on the video.
I don't know, but
he said 8 out of 10 times. What's happened to the other two?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, he's not perfect, Jenka. He's not perfect.
Nobody's still waiting on the video.
Yeah, we need that video. But JR, from your perspective, who needs to step up?
Yeah, so there's a couple guys for me. The first one, and I'm not sure what's been going on with him this preseason, and it's Jayron Kearse. I think the George Iloka signing definitely put him on notice, because Iloka was the player they were hoping that Jayron Kearse could eventually turn into. Even though they spent a 7th-round pick on him, they seemed to be high on him when they first drafted him a couple years ago, and he hasn't been much more than a glorified special teams player. And they seem to be really unhappy with his development to this point. And I'm not sure what has happened to him this preseason, but he just really hasn't flashed at all to this point. And they were hoping that maybe he could step up from just being a special teams type of player. And he hasn't shown that to this point. And that was one of the biggest reasons why they did end up going out and getting Iloka. And like I said earlier, I think that signing really put him on notice, because now they have a very crowded safety room and they have 5 guys that are capable of getting the job done. And Kearse definitely is that 5th guy on the depth chart right now. So Jayron Kearse definitely would be one guy. And these two guys really aren't being put on notice or need to step up, but I'm really interested to see how this battle does end up going. And that's the RB3 battle between Rock Thomas and Mike Boone. I think this game really could settle the tie that they have going on right now. Boone obviously has flashed more than what Rock Thomas has done to this point. And I don't think the battle is done to this point, and I don't think Boone has a huge lead like some people are really saying, because Rock Thomas he played really well against the Broncos, but I'm really interested to see how that battle does end up shaking out.
My Boone's dad knows that the battle is over.
And he is not afraid to let you know. He has not seen Rock Thompson, quote, earn, end quote, a yard all preseason.
Did he call him Rock Thompson too?
I was like, man, actually, no, that's Ed who's been calling him Rock Thompson. And because Ed's been calling him Rock Thompson on the Scolders podcast, shout out to the Scolders podcast. You can check them out also on the Climbing the Pocket Station Network, whatever we're calling this thing. They're rolling with us. So last week when they recorded their episode, he messed up, was calling him Rock Thompson. I corrected it for him in the show notes. He was listening to the pod and was like, oh, man, I called that man Rock Thompson the entire episode and didn't even know. So he updated it this week. But because I keep seeing it, now I called him Rock Thompson. That's not his name. I blame Ed for this. Ed got me calling the man out his name. Sorry about that, JR. Did you have any more people after Rock Thomas?
No, that was pretty much it.
That you wanted to talk about?
That was it for the most part.
Okay. All right. Guys, did we miss anything? Is there anything else that we need to talk about? And we got Iloka. We still got no offensive line.
Adrian Peterson in Washington.
Yo, did you know Adrian Peterson signed with Washington?
Who?
It's crazy, man.
Oh, Adrian.
Wearing, you see Clint Portis upset that they let him wear number 26?
Oh, man.
Wow.
Oh, man, but Clint was always a different kind of dude.
Hey, but Portis wasn't even mad when Brashad Breeland was wearing it.
Oh, man. Maybe Adrian owes him some money or something. You never know. And I don't know. Offensive line, I don't know what else there is to be said. Folks now seem to be getting a little nervous about Pat Elflein, but
Michael Schofield.
We've been told him. Michael Schofield, yeah. And they have interest, didn't Doogie say they had some interest in him?
Yeah, I was looking into that. I would love that. Throw like a scenario where they got Jeremiah Searles or Nick Easton. You could throw a trade, you know, a late round pick, a conditional seventh round pick for a guy like Michael Schofield. Like, look at Eli Harold from San Francisco to Detroit. It's a conditional seventh round pick in 2020.
They got the Corey Coleman package.
Only if he's on the roster for four games. Like, that's crazy.
I don't like that trade. I mean, I like it, but I wish it was us. Because I feel like Eli Harold with Patterson.
I wish more teams would do stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it costs. You get to try a guy out for basically $0.
Yes.
See if it works out. If not, cut him. Pay nothing. But anywho, that's it. Before we get out of here, just some things, you know, a couple housekeeping items we got to run through here. If you're not already, make sure you're regularly checking. Just bookmark it. Bookmark climbinthepocket.com. A lot of great stuff coming out. We got Realistic Randy coming out with the videos for y'all every week. Good Morning Gallahorn. They're going to be coming out with a new video every Saturday morning. This week, they got Ted Glover, Purple Buckeye of Daily Norseman, coming on to talk about all sorts of stuff and to see if they can maybe get Ted to start drinking better beer. David doesn't like Ted's beer. If you haven't already, you should have, but if you haven't, Flip put out a new pod this week. The Scolders have a new pod this week. Randy obviously let y'all know how he feels about the Aaron Rodgers rule. Josh put out that awesome piece, throw by throw, video breakdown, Kirk Cousins. If you haven't, do yourself a favor, check it out. And probably not this week, but soon, Eric, Luke, and I, we've talked about it. We'll be getting back in there, doing some work. Pocket Protectors, getting back to it before the season. Yeah, I feel like I covered everything. And, you know, if you're not, make sure that you're checking out our friends over at Purple PTSD. They do great work over there. Check out their podcast. They got our man Luke Braun also doing his thing. JR, I know you were recently on a podcast, some podcast. What was it? So I can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, so I was on the Devy Watch podcast just talking about 2019 prospects. We went over quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers. So go over and check that out, the Devy Watch podcast.
All right, it will be in the show notes, so check it out. But that's it. That's all I got. Miles, you got anything else we need to talk about?
Huh?
Okay, word. Nothing for Miles. Prince, you got anything?
I'm good.
Okay, all right. Well, listeners, thanks for sticking with us. As always, I am your host, Jason Brown. Find me on Twitter @BrownJason. And yeah, we will talk to you soon. Have a good one.